Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Jessica Britt. We're going to be exploring trauma, emotions, and spirituality. We're going to be particularly talking about how trauma doesn't just impact our nervous system and our emotional body. Trauma also touches us in a deeper place. And part of our capacity towards healing is healing from that place. To give you a little bit of Jessica's background, Jessica Britt has been a spiritual teacher and training director of the Diamond Approach since 1985. In the 1970s, she specialized in the field of childhood sexual and physical abuse. The 1980s saw her on the Gestalt staff at Esalen, where she initiated groups for adults with childhood abuse. In her decades of inner work, she has gained a unique perspective on the impacts of trauma on the spiritual journey and its practices. Well, firstly, Jessica, welcome, and thank you for joining me again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Alex.
So I was reflecting on what you sent through before the interview, and there was a line in there that really caught my attention. And you were saying that trauma impacts more than just our nervous system. The trauma impacts us in places that actually are deeper, like a deeper place in ourselves. I'd love you to speak to that a little bit, to give us some frame of where we're going to go in this conversation.
Yes. I've been thinking about it a lot. You know, I started working in the trauma field kind of in the 1980s. And just getting people to acknowledge trauma has been a very big thing. We've made a very large movement around it, and a very large movement around really understanding the effect of trauma on a person's ability to, frankly, feel good about themselves, to actually function in a really good way in their lives. Probably one of the biggest, the biggest advancements in trauma work have been in the last 10 years, 15 years or so, that has really been looking at trauma's effect on a person's nervous system, on their bodies. There's tremendous, tremendous work that's being done on it. In my own exploration, what I've discovered for myself and working with others, that the trauma doesn't just affect the nervous system. It absolutely affects our sense of self. It really impacts how we see ourselves, how we feel about ourselves. Basically affects our sense of our personality, right? What I've discovered while working through the layers of the history and opening that up, right? Particularly opening up the emotions, that there's a whole other level to a person that we can call their living spirit, their soul, their spiritual nature, their consciousness, that's actually within the body, within the nervous system, and actually more fundamental to it. So the trauma impacts not just our bodies, not just our emotion. Trauma affects our connection with our spiritual nature, basically. And that what I've been really exploring over the last years is how trauma can be a portal to our spiritual nature, as opposed to just a closed door to it.
Which raises a really interesting question around who we are, which is beyond our personality and unknown sense of self. Like this place that you're speaking to, which is also touched and shaped and impacted by trauma. Maybe you can speak a little bit more to what that is, and we can maybe explore about how we can come to know that place in ourselves.
Yeah. Just kind of feeling into, you know, what's been acknowledged through millennia, that to speak about a person's spiritual nature, right, brings in words like living consciousness brings in words like the soul. One of the challenges with opening up what is consciousness, a personal consciousness, what is the soul, is that there's so many layers of religious history on top of that. There's so many opinions about what that is, like, especially like in the Christian traditions. Now, I happen to have been raised Catholic. You know, I can remember as a little girl going, I've got a soul. And from my sense of as a little girl, like, you know, and the way they talk, like, well, where is the soul? Like, oh, the soul is someplace and it's collecting sins. Right. And there's a lot, especially in the West, there's a lot of sense of the soul as a place where our evil deeds are collected. Right. Which is one of the deep impacts of a child who has a lot of trauma, is that they feel like, whether they would put it into words, they feel like there's something in them that is collecting bad, painful marks. I've done something wrong. It's my fault. I deserve this. You know, all the things that children do when under a lot of traumatic imprint, right? So I'm saying this to start off with, because I want to kind of open up, well, what is the soul if we remove for a moment all this religious meanings of it? Right? Is to actually contemplate, you know, and like as we're sitting here, I'm going to invite both of us to contemplate, right? That when we feel ourselves, and also children have a sense of this, what if it's really true there's something more to us than what we've been told we are? Right? In fact, what I've discovered over the years, I call, oftentimes you see this with people with a lot of trauma history in their childhood, I call them the children that see that the emperor has no clothes on.
From that's that favorite, that's really great.
Right, yeah. Right? From that favorite, that fairy tale. And it's the child, there's usually very sensitive children that you feel like, you know, you're in this conventional world, you're being told all these things, and it's almost like the child in their deep soulful intuition can feel that there's something off. Something doesn't make sense here at a deep level. Though at another level, the children, and there's lots of discussion about this, the children basically blame themselves for their trauma. Children blame themselves for almost everything. They blame themselves for a parent's divorce. Right? Now, the psychological meaning of that is that the children are trying to fix themselves, manage themselves, right? And that for defensive reasons, they blame themselves because it's too risky to really see their parents as evildoers, basically. Then they're really in trouble. So they go, no, I'm the evildoer, right? There is that layer, right? But I'd like to introduce another layer, the spiritual layer, that a young child, if you think about your own children, right? And I'm going to invite everybody to think about young children, right? There's something so intrinsically sweet and innocent of newborns. Miraculous. Pure. Mischievous. Feisty. That there's this beingness there before they know their name, before they're told that this is their nose, this is your eyes, you're a boy, you're a girl. There's a living being that's there, right? And if we look, you can feel their livingness. And I'm going to suggest that within that living being, they're more than their bodies and their instincts. That sweetness, that aliveness is a part of their spiritual nature. Right? And out of that spiritual nature, and they're very sweet and loving. Young ones are very generous beings. Right? That a part of why a child ends up blaming themselves comes from their spiritual nature's loving nature. Out of love, oh, mommy, daddy. It's almost like, you know, like a Christ nature. I mean, you know, it's like, I will take on these sins. That out of my loving, right? And that generosity is a kind of a door into our spiritual nature that's more fundamental than our history. Yeah. That was very long-winded. Well, but
I was letting you speak because it was great.
I can get going, I have to say. Well, I love talking about this. I love the sweet truth of it.
Yeah. What also, Jessica, as you're talking, really struck me is that from that place of, to use the word soul, which is the word that we started with here, there is a presence and there's a palpable presence. Like you use the example of a newborn. So my sister-in-law has a six-month-year-old boy, and there is, when he's in the room, he's there. It's like there's and in lots of different ways, you know, whether he's laughing, giggling, crying, frustrated, whatever it is, like he's there. And there's a presence that's there. And there's something which is us, which is not, you know, he doesn't have a formed personality yet. But there is something which is us, which is present, mm-hmm. which is there, mm-hmm. which is, in, I guess, a way, maybe you can speak about this, is it's the us that even experiences the nervous system, right? It's the mm-hmm. us that experiences the events. So maybe you can speak mm-hmm. a little more to that.
Uh-huh. No, beautiful. I love it. I can almost feel him. I know, I can feel him almost. Yes, and you're speaking, this is so useful, right? Because like all young ones are so distinctly unique, right? Like even people who have twins and have identical twins, even though we on the outside might not be able to tell the difference, the mother can. And part of it is not just a little difference in how the eyebrow is that the very essence of the baby, of the toddler, has a unique flavor to them. And so this presence that you're talking about is so beautiful to bring that word in, that we each have a unique flavor or presence of our consciousness that's before our personality, before we're told who we are. That's remarkable, actually. That, and then in a certain way, we all long in a very deep way to come to our authentic uniqueness. Right? Now, trauma or really harsh events, whether it's emotional coming through the ears, or you see something traumatic through your eyes, or something traumatic happens against your body, it's clear that there's an impact on the body. It's clear that there's an impact on the nervous system. The research is clear about it. It's clear that it affects our sense of self and the formation of our personality. What we're opening up in this discussion is that it's also impacting this unique living consciousness that we are. That when the nervous system closes down, which it's going to do, to protect itself. It's not just the nervous system, that the nervous system, the very livingness and sensitivity of the nervous system is a beautiful expression of the very livingness and sensitivity of our unique consciousness. Is in a certain way, you could say our consciousness uses our eyes and our ears to see and to feel and to sense. So that as the nervous system contracts and takes on a certain tension, in fact, you know, Freud famously said, the ego is a body tension, right? That's a very deep contemplation. That I'm suggesting it's not just our bodies Right. Another word that's used instead of soul, especially in Europe, is the word our psyche. You know, Jung really talked about this, right, in very beautiful ways, that there is something about us that infuses our body. You know, in a certain way, you could say, a dear friend of mine just passed away, and so it's very near me in this very moment. And those of us who have been blessed to be with someone who passes, something changes in the room as their body process stops. And we can talk about what leaves the body. Right? I'm suggesting it's our living consciousness that leaves the body. In fact, back to your, was it your nephew and your friend you were just talking about? Being at a birth, what comes into the room during the birth? On that. right? And I've been at enough births and enough death passages to begin to recognize there is almost like a spiritual portal that opens up. And at birth, the consciousness comes in. I mean, it's coming out through the mother, you know, through the mother's body, but there's a presence that comes into the room. And for those of us who have been in death rooms, there's also something, a presence that leaves the body. That is more fundamental than the trauma, and probably the most significant thing, and which is why I really like bringing in the spiritual perspective. Yeah. Is this, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and of course, in a way, the nervous system is of the body, right? Like it literally mm-hmm. is the way that our system is responding and sensing and experiencing the world. And so if who we are is more than just this body, there's a place within us which is having the experience of a dysregulated nervous system. There is a place within us which is having the experience of overloaded emotions that are not being felt and being held. And that place within us, which you're speaking to, is also having an experience of trauma.
Yes, it's definitely having an experience of trauma. There's no question about that, right? Now, let's see how I want to make this bridge. Yeah, so this is kind of classical spiritual language, right? It is having an experience of trauma. You could say the front face of it is having an experience of trauma. The conditioned part of our consciousness that believes the stories about us, that's taken a particular shape, is definitely having an experience of trauma. What I'd like to suggest is that place has a back, has a ground of a larger presence or beingness that is not impacted by the trauma, that our original purity, our original sweetness, our original intelligence, our original uniqueness is also there. And that one of the things that spiritual work attempts to do is in a certain way have the living consciousness begin to not just feel and know itself through the front experiences, but through, you know, meditation, inquiry, certain orientation, that the living consciousness begins to turn and recognize what's in the most hidden room of itself in a certain way, which I would say is one's spiritual nature.
Yeah. Another little bridge to make here mm-hmm. is uh-huh. emotions. And yeah. and so when traumatic events happen, they impact our nervous system, but they also impact our emotional body.
Yes, and definitely.
Maybe you can speak a little bit to that and then how that can be a potential pathway towards this deeper place inside of us.
Yes. So I'm just sensing into my heart center, right? Yes. So it's so clear that in traumatic events, the nervous system gets overloaded. But what also gets overloaded is the emotional center gets overloaded, right? Either with fear, horror, disbelief, shock. There's so much work on this, a beautiful work. You know, I'm thinking of Peter Levine and Gabor, and you know, there's so many people talk about the freeze, right? What's freezing? It's our nervous system that's freezing, right? But it's also our heart center, our emotions that are freezing. Deep connection between, you know, the limbic system where the emotional center is, feeling nature. So all of that gets dysregulated. That's the, you know, gets for most people frozen and or acted out. Both happen, right? Now, because the emotions are so alive in a certain way, and not to feel them, actually, Thomas talks about this, and I thought he did a really beautiful job, that not to feel them, to go numb, is an active process. We have to use some of our life force in a certain way against ourselves for the natural movement, the natural response of being hit, right? And you want to go, ow, right? And then how many children are told, if I'll give you something to cry for, right? The famous horrifying sentence. And then you have to like not respond to your own pain. I mean, how horrific is this, right? So there's an incredible complex thing going on in our consciousness, not just in our bodies, in our sense of self, right? So many people end up out of a traumatic history not wanting to deal with their emotions. So what's the bridge? What's the bridge? The often what you see is that people who are moved to do inner work or moved to work on their trauma recognize that these frozen places, this unmoved places, are either leaving them over anxious, over frightened, not really engaged in their life. And you can't help but notice that you feel encapsulated. You can't help but notice that there's something off. So you start doing some kind of therapy, and there's wonderful therapies out there. And you start learning to allow an emotion in a certain kind of way. And there's a huge body of work, and I was involved in that work, you know, where you got a huge gold star if you started catharting and having your emotions. Great, I actually learned to cry today. And, oh, I actually got angry today, or And there is something very enlivening and wonderful about it to recognize that you are in a safe enough space to let all of these things start to move. And you do start feeling more alive. Now, the bridge is that one of the things that I'm very thankful to my teacher, you know, Hamid Ali with the Diamond Approach, is his the powerful way that a bridge was made that our emotions, I'm going to just use anger as an example, is more than just an emotion of anger. And yes, it's an important step to let, let's say, the anger move. It's an important step to let the pain move. What was amazing is to recognize, I can remember this moment when I was learning to feel my anger. Anger was a tough one for me. I was a crier. easy to cry. Anger.
It's funny how different ones are easy for different people, right?
Oh yeah, no, and it also kind of matched the Enneagram. Yes, it could be a whole thing on just that. But yes, I was a crier. And for me to feel angry, and one of the reasons anger is so tough for people, is it reminded me of my stepfather and I didn't want to be like him. So there was a whole piece of work to do. Like, can I feel my own anger? And it doesn't mean I'm going to be abusive. That's a journey, right? So I started feeling my own anger, and it was really amazing, because when I started feeling my anger, only by feeling it, I recognized something deep inside the anger was not a killer. I was not my stepfather. Yeah. And yes, I was very, very angry, right? And then with the anger came heat, came energy, came. And so Hamid said, okay, now feel the heat. And the anger expression was over. Just feel the heat. So, you know, felt the heat. He said, okay, what else do you know? Okay, it feels warm. Oh, my body feels more expanded. Oh, I actually feel strong. Strong. I felt this inner strength I'd never felt before. And it was very clear it was not anger. It was just the simplicity of, I feel strong. I feel here. I feel landed. Right? So that what I started to appreciate that within each emotion, there's a seed to a spiritual quality. So inside the anger was a seed to the strength.
I want to just amplify something here, which I think is really important, which is that often people's initial place with emotions can be, well, why would I feel that? I'm just going to feel all the things I don't want to feel. And often the way that that's then responded to is, well, you need to get rid of the emotion because it's not good to hold that emotion in your body. But the point you're making here is, it's more than that. That actually, in allowing and feeling that emotion, it's not just trying to sort of get rid of it. Mm. There's actually a treasure in it.
Yes,
that it's a gateway and a pathway to something.
Yes, exactly. You said it beautifully. And not only do we not want to get rid of them, right? Emotion of motion. Motions move. They're dynamic. Right? So usually we're holding back our emotions and we wonder why we feel stuck or limited. Right? So it's not a getting rid of it. It's allowing the movement that our consciousness, not just our bodies, our soul has sounds, has feelings, has a richness, right? And that what I'm suggesting, right, and there's different emotions lead to different spiritual qualities. I'm just focusing on the red we call it the red because it's hot and warm and strong, right? Wearing orange in honor of it.
You're appropriately dressed for the conversation.
Exactly. That there's a transformational quality. There's an alchemy in allowing the emotions. That the emotions, when held from an orientation of presence, wanting to understand them, giving them room in a certain way to tell their story, that there's a natural unfoldment and development. And I like the word alchemy, where the anger from a certain orientation with a certain kind of support can really become a portal to your strength, a spiritual quality, right? Feeling one's pain, which is tough. I'm not saying it's easy. And oftentimes it takes the kindness of another to hold the deep sorrow or pain. That over time, allowing the heart to have its feelings, to have its pain, can open up within one's own soul, one's own consciousness, loving kindness, compassion. Right? And there's one thing to feel it from the outside. It's quite another to start to feel the compassion actually arise from within one's own beingness in response to the suffering. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, there's a kind of evolutionary movement, as maybe we could say it that way.
It reminds me of what you said earlier in the interview around that inherent goodness in a newborn baby. And yes. That in a way, it's that same quality in us, in our adult life,
mm-hmm.
that there is a place within us which is beyond emotion, trauma, nervous system, mm-hmm. which has, I guess, an inherent goodness, but also an inherent drive towards something.
Yes, yes, beautifully said, yes. So if we take what we're talking about and just expand it, these qualities, the strength, the compassion, joy, curiosity, sweetness, love, all these qualities, right? That if we allow our souls, our consciousness to move, we stop sitting on ourselves and saying no to ourselves, and we start saying yes. And this is an important point, saying yes, because I want to come to something more authentic about myself. I'm not saying yes just to act out my feelings. Right? It's like, oh, these feelings are moving and I want to be with them. I want to feel them. And I understand that they are a portal. There's something very fundamental about me that we long for, like that missing element. And so that the basic goodness, the purity of our being, the ground of our consciousness, not only has all these qualities, which it does, we can really begin to know, not just intellectually, to recognize, oh my God, I'm not broken. I'm fine in here. Not only am I fine, I'm quite a treasure. Actually, you know, to feel one's basic goodness, to feel one's like, oh, these things happen to me, but they're not me.
Yeah, it's the phrase that came to my mind as you were talking was that to really heal our trauma, in a way, we have to discover that place within us which is not touched by that trauma, right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Because I think one of the, you know, as you spoke to at the start, we've come such a long way over recent years in our understanding of trauma. But I think in some cases, one of the prices perhaps we've paid for that is then an over-identification with that trauma.
Oh, well.
Right? Which is like, in a way, that the breakthrough at one stage becomes the limitation at the next stage. Like the prison break puts us in the next prison, in a way, which is like, I'm fine to, oh shit, I've had trauma, to, well, I now, because I had trauma, my life can't happen. So what I really appreciate about where you're pointing here is that there is a place the other side of that, or beneath that, or that holds that. I don't know how to position it in space, but yeah.
I mean, there's such a fabulous place on the other side, right? Yeah. And there is a time where it's right action to go, oh yes, I was traumatized.
Yes.
Right? No question. And that needs a lot of attention, right? And there's wonderful work about that. And at a certain point, I remember when I reached it with my work with Hamid and Dick Price at Esalen. And so I was doing the Gestalt work and I was doing, so I was being worked at all levels, right? And I realized, okay, I now make sense of my history, my verbal therapy. Okay, I now have access to my feelings, Gestalt, Reiki work, the different things I did. Okay. But who am I underneath all this? I remember saying that to Hamid, and you know, Hamid going, oh, I'm so glad you noticed.
<That's>
you know, that you're more than your history.
I could really imagine him saying that as well.
Oh, no, he did. He did. No, he did. Right. He did. He said, oh, because I said to him, well, I have a body. I have feet. I went down this list. And he said, but I, he says, oh, you're noticing. Oh, that was such an amazing moment. And so the spiritual orientation allows one to go, okay, I've worked through, I'm understanding all these layers, but it points to, well, then what and who am I actually? And to actually begin to feel the spiritual qualities. I'm actually, another sweet memory is coming. When I first started experiencing compassion or loving kindness from within myself, right? I've been very blessed, you know, working with Hamid all these years, working with Dick Christ. I've had some wonderful therapists and spiritual teachers. And I remember choosing both Dick Price and Hamid. They had one, well, they had many things in common, but one thing is they had very kind eyes. Very accepting, very kind eyes. And I thought, okay, I'm good here, right? But I remember the time when it was after feeling a very deep pain within the vortex of Hamid's presence, my own willingness to just simply be here, Jessica, with this. And there was a deep wound in my chest. And I was just breathing into it and just feeling it and being less emotionally reactive than I normally would be. So I wasn't just immediately discharging it. I was just kind of, okay, feel this. And then from within myself, this incredible, the only word I could use, kindness arose within myself. This compassion arose. And my inner awareness, it was, I'll never forget the moment, was like, oh my God, this is me. I had a feeling like, oh, this is, and it was not coming from my history self. Right? And it was such an inspiring, touching moment. I mean, there was a lot more to do, I can tell you. But in that moment, to recognize, oh, there's something in me, in here, that is kind, soothing, present, and way more fundamental than my history. That was a very big turning point.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something about that experience, which is almost like a reference point. Mm-hmm. But it's like to have a taste of that place, even if then we lose that connection quite quickly. And it's like, oh, but that's yes. Where, and I think often then, over time, it's almost like it's training that muscle memory to find that way back to, oh yeah, this that's that place again. And I guess I'm curious for people that are watching this, mm-hmm. what helps them begin to or continue to orient towards that place?
Well, I feel moved to say, trust your longing.
Hmm. Yeah.
To move you towards being more real. And to, yes, there's a very big movement to learn how to be authentic with one's emotional life and risk that kind of vulnerability and that kind of truthfulness. And then I want to say, stay open and curious that what's the inner nature of these emotions? Could it be true that there's more to my grief than I've considered, or there's more to my anger than I've considered? You know, if what I'm saying has some possibility of truth to it, is there a gem or treasure inside my emotions? Is there a way that they can continue to open up, right? And the other thing about the anger, which there's many reasons why think the anger piece is so relevant. It's not just brings strength. It brings a courage. Right? Which allows us to really be curious. Like one of the spiritual qualities, it's a very funny one because it's a lot of us, depending on our cultural upbringing, that one of the spiritual qualities is curiosity. Right? So from a certain perspective, a certain spiritual perspective, whether you want to use God or true nature or Buddha or the absolute, all the names, the many names, is that ultimately true nature seems to be very curious. It's up to a lot of mischief. It's creating a lot of stuff. We could be in favor of what's happening. We cannot be in favor with it, but it's clear that there's some kind of dynamic creative process going on. And to consider embracing that in oneself and talking about curiosity, and don't come to a conclusion. Keep things open.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to just spotlight something you said a few minutes ago around trusting that longing. And I think we spoke about this together in a previous interview, where I think my memory of what you were saying was that longing is pointing to something, like that there is a wisdom in that, like it's an inner call. It's something not to be tried to escape from, but something to turn towards.
Yes. Yes. And you're speaking in this moment, I can almost start feeling it. Right. So in the spiritual language, right, it's called the flame. There's a longing that this living consciousness that I'm suggesting that is more fundamental than our history wants to know and express itself. And it's going to come through us as a longing, as a fire, as a flame. Some of the people who are listening here, you can recognize yourself. Your friends know you as warriors of truth. You're going to get to the bottom of it. Right? It takes a certain kind of, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I'm going to solve this. I'm going to figure out what the meaning of life is. There are many ways it expresses itself. Right? And that living dynamism, probably one of the biggest challenges I want to just name here, is to trust ourselves. One of the downsides of trauma, a lot of downsides of trauma, is that we lose trust in ourselves. Right? And one of the things that can begin to rebuild trust in ourselves is if we can kindly and truthfully recognize how brilliant we were, how brilliant all our defenses are, how brilliant all our hiding places were until this moment. That you are here in this moment, and that you can go, oh, there was a wisdom in my shutting down. And I feel the call now to open up. I can trust this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, which is often a real sign of the progress we're making on that journey, right? That there's now enough safety and enough curiosity and enough holding that something else can happen.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So many questions I could ask, and I'm mindful we're out of time. But Jessica, I'd love you to speak a little bit to how people can explore further. I know in particular, at the time of the initial running of this conference, you've got an event coming up at Esalen. So maybe you want to speak a little bit to that. And and also maybe a bit more broadly, the Diamond Approach.
Yes. Yes. I felt called to begin to make more explicit this connection between the spiritual work I'm involved with and the Diamond Approach, which I'm one of the teachers of for many years now, with my past expertise in trauma work. And make a more explicit connection, like I am in this conversation with you. So to take that a step further, I'm offering a workshop at Esalen, and the dates are February 23rd to March 1st, 2024, and it'll be in the Esalen website at some point soon.
And that's just Esalen, ESALEN.org, because people can go there and find that.
Oh, yes, thank you. And what I'm going to be doing during that workshop is basically expanding this conversation into really focusing on specific emotions as doorways to spiritual qualities. The other thing I'm going to be doing, which we talked about last time, was supporting people to enter into their practices, their spiritual practices, and recognize how trauma history can make the practices, certain practices, more difficult and certain practices more easy, and just kind of open up that conversation to really support practices in a good way.
And then beautiful, and also just mention the diamond approach and what people can find there as well.
So then the diamond approach has online, it's called Diamond Approach Online. Ridwan Foundation, which is RIDHWAN Foundation. So there's a lot of offerings that within the Diamond Approach was a particular spiritual path that integrates many spiritual traditions with Western psychology in a very particular way that really opens up the door to this transformative process. Now, an important thing is the Diamond Approach itself does not focus on trauma, right? It's its own particular spiritual path. In this work that I'm doing with you right now and with what I'm doing at Esalen, I'm just making a bridge a little bit more explicit for people who might be interested.
Yeah, beautiful. Jessica, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, you're welcome, dear. Bye.